Chapter 18, Mental Note. From Gigi Collins to Dad. Date, I have no idea. Dear Dad, I have a lot to tell you, and I'd like to say we'll catch up when I get back, but I'm not sure I get a return trip on this ticket. I think this destiny thing might be one way. But I'll try to package up this little note and get it to you somehow before, whatever. First, I want to come clean about your wedding ring. You took a lot of heat from Mom about losing it, and I know you thought you lost it, because that's like you to lose important stuff. But that's not what happened. I flushed it down the toilet. I understand if you're pissed, but remember that I wasn't even 2 years old yet. I had just learned about pulling the lever and making the water go whoosh, and your ring looked like it wanted to go for a ride. It won't happen again, I promise. Second, about the dried apricot thing, it wasn't your fault. I know it's probably normal to carry around guilt like that our whole lives, but really, as my mind grows and expands, and I learn at this incredible pace, I can tell you one thing. Shit happens. That's the beauty and the danger of free will. It allows us to find our way in the multiverse, but also to make mistakes, little and big, from stubbing our toes to accidentally killing ourselves. And it's no one's fault. So you can let that one go, Dad. Actually, you can let all of them go. All of the guilt for all of the stupid stuff you think you've done. And that's the main point I think I'm trying to get to. That I won't remember all the stupid stuff, although maybe I will, just for a laugh. What I'll really remember are all the wonderful little moments you and Mom shared with me. Like that day at the dinosaur park in Florida. You aren't kidding when you said that was one of my favorite things, Dad. I dreamed about that park and riding the dinosaurs for weeks after that. I dreamed about owning a dinosaur zoo and petting them and sharing them with Hannah. Of course, now I know better that dinosaurs are train wrecks and helpless against their own self-destructive instincts, and I will definitely be steering clear of any I may meet in the future, if there is a future for me. I'll also remember that time you took Hannah and I to the Hamilton kiddie pool on the Lower East Side last summer. It was the first time I had seen so much water. It was like the ocean to me. And you smeared me with sunscreen, but you missed a spot, right on my foot, and I had a red foot for 2 weeks. But it didn't matter, we were both splashing and giggling, and you were acting like a shark, like only a dad could do, in a foot of water. And the sun seemed warm enough to last forever, and everything was color, and water, and love. Oh, and how will I ever forget my first birthday party, where you made that cake that I was supposed to taste and smear all over my face? But instead, Mrs. Rosen's dog jumped up and snagged it off the high chair, running around the apartment trying to gobble it down before anyone could catch her, leaving a trail of gooey chocolate mixed with dog slime that took you guys a week to clean up. I'll never forget watching you two taking turns scrubbing the area rug in the living room, whispering, "Happy birthday," to each other, knowing you'd never say it the same way again, laughing and falling into each other's arms and rolling around chuckling like little kids to yourselves. Even then, Dad, you and Mom showed me so much about love. Gosh, Dad, I'll remember it all. There's so much more, and I hope there's more to come. Because I've grown up in a matter of hours. Years of my life compressed into minutes. I'm hoping, like the bellows on an accordion, it'll stretch out again and fill all the little spaces with music and memories. But even if it doesn't, Dad, I wanted to say thank you. Thank you for taking me to see Old Man one more time. Nikola Tesla really was one in a million, and you were willing to take a chance, which turned out to be the ultimate chance, to make it happen. Thank you for watching out for the multiverse these past few years. I'm not sure you'll ever get the credit you deserve with all the FBI cover-up slash misinformation, but really, you did a bang-up job. Plus, I'm sure you'll try to give yourself credit at every opportunity you get, right? Like with that guy who, what an absolute creep, you showed him. And the blue juice? We all would have had a pretty nasty blue future if it wasn't for you, Mr. President. And thank you, Dad, for loving me. I know that sounds strange, like love isn't something you thank someone for, but I don't care. Thank you. Because love, and this is one of the things I know for sure, powers everything. Whether it's enfolding or unfolding, before time, through time, and after time. And you've given all of yours to me. I love you, Dad.
Are you all right, Gigi?
It's Barb, wiping a tear from the corner of my eye. Yes, Barb, I was, just packaging something up for somebody. We're walking down the same familiar hallway of the interdimensional transfer apparatus, but also not the same. totally different. Imagine being able to see inside the hallway, at the potentials and forces creating it all. That's what we're seeing. Orange, fiery, but strangely not burning us. I don't think it has a consciousness, not like ours anyway. But something senses our presence, our purpose, and is letting us pass.
Oh dear, look at you, Gigi. Those clothes are for a teenager. And you're a grown woman now.
I laugh. Yeah, pretty tight, uncomfortable. But not as uncomfortable as that medieval wedding dress looks.
You'd be surprised. It fits me like a glove.
She twirls around, allowing it to billow out and brush against me. Well then, let's get you to the chapel, Barb. And I turn the next left.
How do you know where you're going? We don't have an in controller.
I don't know if I can explain. It's sort of like I can see a map in my mind.
Of the whole thing?
No, just the part in front of me and where I'm headed. Like if I concentrate on my destination, it pulls and pushes me like the needle on a compass. We walk like this for a while, turning left, right, this way and that, taking elevators, peering into doorways along the way. Not that they show us anything. They're just orange like everything else.
What happened to them? The dimensions?
They're waiting.
For what?
For you. No pressure, Great Aunt Barb. Just the entire multiverse unfolding and enfolding. They're all waiting for you. I wink at her.
Oh, dear.
Don't faint, Barb. Not now. Another silent few moments, then.
Gigi, is there anything inside this? Like, inside the inside? Like, does it keep going?
Great question, Barb. I have no idea. I look up. Maybe this thing knows. Floating a foot or so above three doors we're facing is a figure, formed by the undulating orange flames. It's the top half of what looks sort of human. In a loud voice, it announces, "Welcome to your destiny." Then it just floats there for a while, silent. I'm not sure. Are we supposed to bow or something? It looks down and smiles.
Not necessary. Allow me to introduce myself. I am the plumber.
I snort. I can't help it.
You're kidding, right?
Barb chuckles.
The plumber?
The figure scowls.
What? You don't like it?
Well, it's just that you're some kind of ethereal, godlike being made up of paradoxical, enfolding, multiverse orange flames. That's like the last name I would have expected. To be honest, I wasn't even expecting a name. Or maybe a name that couldn't be uttered or something.
I like names. Names that can be uttered. My utterable name is the plumber.
We both snort now, Barb and I. And I don't know why we can't help it. It turns into one of those giggle fits. I think we're both trying to imagine this beautiful godlike creature strapping on a tool belt and bending over the kitchen sink showing its ass crack. The poor plumber is looking flustered and embarrassed.
Look, you two, it makes perfect sense. I even used a metaphor from your own dimension to manifest. Come on, cut me some slack.
Sorry. So, can you explain?
Imagine you are in a house. The house looks and runs perfectly. Why?
I start to understand. Because it's got plumbing?
Exactly. All the stuff you don't see. Plumbing, wiring, air conditioning, insulation. The stuff behind the stuff. The house only works because it's got plumbing. That's why I'm the plumber.
Barb raises her hand, excited.
Ooh, so I have a question. Is there stuff inside the stuff? Like, is there something inside the plumbing that makes the plumbing work? Like, is there a reality inside your reality, which is inside our physical reality?
The plumber fidgets uncomfortably.
I am not at liberty to say.
I laugh. You don't know, do you?
It glares down at me, miffed. Look, a few hours ago, you were worried about pooping in your diaper.
Then glares at Barb.
And you had your nose in 10 different romance novels. Now you want to know about levels of reality within levels of reality?
You don't know, do you?
Shush, it doesn't matter.
A bolt of orange lightning strikes the floor right in front of us with a loud crack.
Now, choose a door. They're waiting.
It points down. Oh, the plumber has three arms now, by the way, one for each door. I stare at the doors. Hold on. You're going to base the fate of the entire multiverse and all time and physical reality on a random choice?
Free will.
I thought it was our destiny.
It's a dance. Come, Gigi. Free will and destiny. Together. That much you know already.
I pace back and forth in front of the doors.
Okay, I'll buy that. But why does free will have to be random? We're not talking about luck, like the lottery. Why randomly choose a door?
Because if you knew the outcome of your choice, it wouldn't be free will now, would it?
Barb nods and whispers, Fair point. It's got a point, and it's fair. No, that's apples and oranges. Okay, the plumber, when I have a choice between outcomes, I make it based on inputs, context, knowledge of the risks, not random blind choices. This isn't the same.
Most of the choices you make in life are based on incorrect assumptions, bad data, or totally irrelevant context that has no bearing on the outcome. You are blind. Choose a door.
No, I'm not done yet. Most of the choices I make in life are binary, yes or no. Go to Subway and get a sandwich, or eat the leftover half sandwich in the fridge. Take a shower or stay in my jammies, yes or no. There should be two doors, not three.
The plumber shrugs. Fine, you're a real pain in the ass, you know that?
When one of the doors disappears. Two doors, a 50-50 chance. One side of the coin, everyone wins. The other side, well, game over. It's not fair. Or as you would say, Dad, this is bullshit. Wait, you know what you'd say? You'd say that there's always a way around the rules. You'd tell me to cut the coin down the middle so you get heads and tails. You'd tell me to make up an outrageous story on live TV to get your hands on a rhodium asteroid. You'd tell me to sew a bunch of people's clothes together and tie them to a surprised unicorn to get out of medieval Paris and race home. Okay, that one's kind of a stretch, I admit. Two doors, and two of us. I turn to Barb, and I don't even have to send her the thought saying, left. And she grins. And she runs to the left door, and I run to the right, and we throw them both open. The plumber shouts,
No, that's against the rules. You weren't... I mean, how the hell... What the fuck?
But while the plumber tries to unscramble its own brain and make sense of what we just did, we each stand in front of an open doorway. Barb is bathed in afternoon light, looking down, tears rolling down her face, at her long-lost love, Prince Jean, exactly where you and Uncle Pete last left him, groveling in the mud as his beloved, his destiny, disappeared through the strange doorway. And now here she is again, magically reappearing before him, and he stands. She is old, an old woman now, but it doesn't matter. Love doesn't care about age or time. He holds up Uncle Pete's keys, delicately unclasping the heart charm engraved with a T, and holds it up to an identical one, brand new, hanging from a chain around his neck. Barb reaches out her hand, jangling her bracelet, letting her own heart join with his, together at last, as they were always meant to be. She looks over to me, winks, and whispers, Thank you, Gigi. Oh, listen, there are a couple of more packs of Pall Malls in here if you decide to take up smoking. Then she hands me her Mary Poppins bag and takes Jean's hand, stepping into yesterday, into some dimension somewhere, quickly becoming the young maiden she was when we left on this great adventure. Goodbye, Barb. I blow her a kiss. And I look up at the plumber, and its face has changed. Still so mysterious, but now the slightest hint of a wry smile, like a Mona Lisa smile, the smile of someone that knows something that no one else will ever know. Then I turn back to my own choice, the open doorway in front of me, and realize, it's home. It's still 1947 in there, Tesla's time, Tesla's hotel room. There is still something left to be done. Bodies lie on the floor, old, tired, or lifeless, and Hannah, with Uncle Pete's head in her lap, weeps. And next to her, my father. You, Dad, the man I admire more than any other, my mentor and friend. The guy who saved me more times than I can count, in more ways than I can count. You're about to die. But I'm coming, Dad. I'm coming home.